what happens.
Now, you were with George Foreman? Is that the story?
The administration is not.
Yeah, no. Do we have the tape on?
How can they not come?
Because they're the administration. They rule the world. He said sarcastic.
Wow.
Or we have the tape? Oh, is that the tape up there? Yeah. Is that what I'm seeing? Okay, thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're here at the meeting of the Housing Planning and Operations Committee. It is Tuesday, the 9th of November, and we are starting about 50 minutes late at 12:50. Our purpose today was twofold. First, we intended to have an update on the implementation plan from the administration in the person of Mary Mann and George Oros. We have received late word that they will not be attending. We are not amused because it was at their insistence that we have every 2 week meetings. And while there was a press conference for the county executive to introduce the budget, it seems it's not a nice thing to be just like this. But it is what it is. So we're going to move on to the second item, which is to discuss the changes in the Section 8 program, following up upon the county's the administration's sending a letter to the state government that we will be discontinuing the administration of the program here in Westchester County through the county as of the end of the year. We've invited a number of advocates and service providers and individuals to come and speak to us, and I'd like to ask you not only to make your presentations, which I believe a number of them would be rather passionate, but also to give us questions that we should ask the administration. I think we all know about the excessive additions of the IT cost to the budget, which has been largely the cost of the reason of which the administration has asserted that the program loses money. But other things, nitty-gritty is good under the circumstances. So let's go with our permanent team here of Ms. Well, let's just start with Blanca. If you have a statement or some things you'd like to say?
I think my statements will reflect the audience's statements, so rather.
Okay, we'll pass on you. Dennis? Dennis is with Blanca.
And like that, I'll pass.
Jeff? Okay, then let's just begin at the beginning, and we'll start over here with the front row. Next to Dennis is.
Klasner.
Would you come up front, please? And Dennis, we're going to do this like we do at the Board of Legislators. We're going to call names, and then you just sort of line up on the row. So if you come up to the chairs up front, two at a time. Andrea and Dennis.
John, you're making me hungry.
Andrea. Right there. That's good. Thank you.
Last time.
Okay. For the record, please state your name and your association.
Andrea Klasner, Deputy Director, Westchester Residential Opportunities.
Dennis Hannery, Executive Director, Mount Vernon United Tenants.
Okay, let's begin. Andrea's first.
I haven't prepared anything. What are we?
Speak from the heart, whatever.
Speak from the heart. Well, the concern here on Section 8 program is the fact that there hasn't been any planning for not implementing the program in Westchester, and there are people who are going to be impacted very severely who depend upon Section 8 in a county that has very unaffordable housing. Can it be administered better by another contractor, by a private organization? Perhaps, but there hasn't been any planning for it, and we're quite concerned about the transition that will occur over the next few months. What will happen if the transition hasn't taken place successfully by the time December 31st rolls around? So we are quite concerned, and we deal with people every day who have severe housing issues and are at risk of homelessness and cannot find affordable housing. And so we are quite concerned.
Okay. Mr. Henry.
Yeah, I didn't prepare anything either, but I mean, I echo a lot of Andrea's concerns. I mean, there's no transition period available here at all. And you know, you even if things aren't working out well, at least you know what you got. I mean, try to, you know, outsource this stuff at a late date without any idea of what's going to happen. I mean, it's putting the most vulnerable people in an incredibly vulnerable, more vulnerable place. I don't think the Section 8 program is administered as perfectly as it should be, but I think it does. I think they do a pretty good job over at 112 East Post Road. I go up there quite frequently. I represent people at hearings and such. I think the staff is very professional. I think you get return phone calls. When you talk about this thing shipping it out elsewhere, people at least have some level of comfort knowing who their workers are, know they can get in touch with them. We've been told that this is going to be put up for an RFP from the state, which could go at least anywhere in the country, maybe even, people said, theoretically go international. I mean, we know in Eastchester the inspections are outsourced to a Florida company. I mean, we can't expect people who can't get in touch with their landlord on a regular basis or their DSS worker now to be able to reach people in Florida or in Kentucky or in
Mumbai.
I mean, this is incredible. I mean, it's mind-blowing when you think about it. We deal with people all the time, and I mean, I know as an advocate the difficulty sometimes reaching people in government, you know, trying to reach right around the corner from me, the District Office of the Department of Social Services, not getting through, having all these barriers put in front of you. As bad as that is, to think of it being outsourced out of the state or even upstate or out of the country is mind-blowing. We're talking about, you know, the great majority of people who depend upon Section 8 assistance are people of limited means. I mean, some are very poor, but some are working class, but they don't have the time and the energy and the resources to get people, track people around, spending all this time to track people throughout the country. I mean, it's mind-blowing to think that they'd even propose something like this. I think the county board, when we were here last week, this committee went over, this program has pretty much paid for itself all the time. Mr. Oros kept on talking about the legacy cost, you know, talking about 30 years down the line. I mean, I think we can do some, you know, planning around those kind of things. But, you know, you're better off with what you have than to throw something open like this. I think, you know, there's a certain comfort level among the advocate community about that the Section 8 program works fairly well. You know, those of us who deal with clients on a regular basis know we can get through to people, our clients can get through to people, and we get some level of satisfaction. I would have no confidence whatsoever if this was being shipped elsewhere. And people are getting murdered as it is right now in this housing crisis. To have this further barrier thrown in their face, I think, is sinful.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to start with the legislator, so with Ms. Williams, come up to the table and then come on, Ms. Williams.
Well, I share Dennis's concern about the legacy piece of it. If this is truly one of the concerns of administration, my question is this legacy concern apply to every department that does any kind of contract work with any agency? Because if that's the case, then we could start with the ninth floor and say, what kind of legacy benefits are we concerned about there down the road? If we're talking about cost, let's deal legitimately with the cost of the program. That's what it's all about. That's what the contract is all about.
Ms. Marcotte.
I'm doing a little research here on your comment. So excuse me one second, because I'm not sure what your statement was that the town of Eastchester outsources. Oh, okay. I was just texting the section director, Section 8 director, saying you don't outsource to Florida.
Yonkers,
okay. I gotta think about it. Everybody like you.
I had to
make a presentation.
Okay.
I truly, if we are talking about the costs, I think we need to examine what the costs are. And if it is a loss, even if it's, quite frankly, $100,000, then $100,000 is $100,000. It's not a drop in a bucket when you compare it to a very enormous budget. Having said that, I think there are probably some concerns. I think many of them can be dealt with. I do not believe that the onus is on the county to find a replacement for it or go out and find someone else to administer the program. The onus, of course, is on the state, and as you alluded to, apparently they are doing that because that would be their obligation. If they do, however, at least my understanding of it is, if they do outsource it to someone out of state, that very well may be the case. However, the inspections would still be done locally. I think one of the arguments for not doing here at the county and possibly sort of farming it out to more local entities, if you will, is that the inspections are done locally, possibly more thorough, if you will. I don't know a heck of a lot about the program. I certainly do know the basics. The checks and everything would come locally. In terms of helping people to find affordable housing, it's not a function. It's certainly not something the county does. It's not a real estate agent. I know the local Section 8 offices don't go out and find you housing. At least that's not how many. And if I'm wrong, correct me. This is my understanding. That is not the function nor the role of the Section 8 directors or their staff. The program works as you go find an apartment that takes the Section 8. Then you bring back the voucher. They'll process the lease, the paperwork, the payments, and so forth. Am I correct in that regard? Mm-hmm. So I don't see as if this is a huge... I don't even know what the word is. I don't see as if it's something that's really all that terrible and earth-shattering. People will not be by the wayside, as was alluded to last night at the board meeting. I think some of that was an attempt to mislead the residents. The vouchers are not going to dry up and disappear. They're staying here. 4,400 vouchers are not leaving the county, correct? They're not going to Florida. They're not going to Nevada. How'd I do? I wasn't prepared, but those are my immediate thoughts. I think this is becoming all so dramatic, and we're not looking at what is real and what is not real, what the real effects will be. You know, telling people it's going to go to Nevada and Florida, that may be, but it's not going to affect the vouchers. It's not going to affect the 4,400 vouchers that are here.
But it very well may affect them because of the lack of planning for a transition. If the program is going to be more difficult to implement and it's up in the air,
right,
then it's going to discourage landlords from wanting to participate in the Section 8 program, and as it is, many refuse to participate because of concerns about how...
Right, they either like it or they hate it. They want it or they don't.
This is going to discourage, so even though it's not the county's role to find housing, I would certainly think it's the county's interest in making sure that the Section 8 program is not just an empty promise and that its residents are able to find appropriate housing. That's very difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the program is going to be, that much more difficult to administer, and there's confusion and lack of efficiency in administering it, it's going to affect the people who are looking to take advantage.
Right now, because there's nothing in place. But once something obviously is in place, many of those fears, concerns, if you will, are going to disappear.
They could.
Perhaps. And I agree with you. There was no planning for transition, and I get that part of it. It was a surprise to everybody.
But then there's the issue about the ability to contact workers. I mean, how is a client, a tenant who's having a problem, going to contact a worker if it's in Florida or if it's in Atlanta or if it's in Detroit or if it's in L.A. When they have a problem? I mean, they know they can reach somebody at 112 East Post Road. I had somebody yesterday came up. They had to go. Another person is coming up today. She had a meeting at 2 o'clock. They're not going to be able to do that when if it's outsourced, God knows where.
When you mean when they contact the worker?
When the recipient, when one of those 4,400 voucher holders has to resolve a problem, they're not going to be able to do it with somebody in Florida. They can go. They can take the bus up to 112 East Post Road.
Right.
I had somebody in my office today who's going at a 2 o'clock appointment at 112 East Post Road to try to resolve a problem. She's not going to be able to do that when this gets outsourced somewhere.
Right. Okay.
So
I
that problem is not going to get resolved,
right.
And then there's going to be then eventually that she's going to get cut off, then her landlord's going to bring her to court, and she's going to lose her section, she's going to lose her apartment, and she's going to end up in a shelter system. It's going to be cost the county a lot more money.
All right. And
every one of the eviction prevention people are pretty much on board that this is going to lead to much greater homelessness in this county.
Okay. I agree with you. Obviously, that sounds like something that could be a real problem. Yonkers, did you say currently out to us is to something out of state?
Right.
How do they deal with that? And I'm only asking because I do not know. I would be interesting to learn how
the inspection did that. They do not outsource.
Yes,
exactly.
Okay, so the inspections are outsourced by a company that is out of state. However, obviously, the inspectors are there in Yonkers.
Contact with a client is with his or her worker, and that's what's going to be removed and missing. The inspectors, the clients don't deal with the inspectors.
Exactly.
The administrators work with
so
the inspectors.
So is Yonkers administration outsourced?
No.
So they're local.
Here we have a Yonkers legislator.
So is there any program that you can make reference to that the administration is out of state, so we could contact them and speak to them?
I'm not aware.
Before we talk, the Yonkers inspections are done by a company from Florida. It's from MHA.
Right. MHA is the one that manages the contract, and it is a company that manages that is from Florida.
The inspections.
That does the inspections. Yeah. The administration is done through MHA, right?
What's
right.
MHA?
Municipal housing.
Right. So it's local.
No, Bianca's. Yeah.
Right. The administration is local.
And the inspectors are local.
The inspectors are from Florida. The companies,
they fly them
up to come in and do a set of inspections. It's really interesting how they do it. I don't know how they make money doing it, but that's the way the world is.
Right? Okay. But the general contact, the phone calls,
that's local.
I'm bringing you my lease tomorrow so you can look at it and tell me what my payment local. Is.
It's Yonkers.
All local. Yeah.
Yonkers.
So do we know of any Section 8 department, municipal or private, that outsources that personal aspect of it to another state?
Well,
so is that realistic to say it could happen? Because I don't think. And it's certainly not something that we want to happen, and I don't see the state as going in that direction to make that happen.
The real issue.
So I think throwing that around.
No, I understand the point, and it's a fair point. The reality is that while the local person that you may see is the rep, if you will,
right.
is local, if the management of that company is in a different state,
yes.
you do not have the same level of relationship as we do right now, right? Where where we manage, for example, the 4,400 certificates right. here in Westchester County, and we could give assurances, as we did through our source of income discussion, to say, you know what, Mr. and Mrs. Landlord, before you you want to go through the process correctly on validating someone's application
right.
for tenancy,
yes.
and they have a Section 8 certificate, you could call our Section 8 department, and we will tell you what the history is, right? We won't have that, right? That was important. Thanks, John. I was like, whoa, what's that? Thanks, John. Right? I'm sorry, John, making you laugh, right?
That aspect is doing that.
And the question again for us, through this process is whether or not the issue is a cost issue or a management issue, right? So if we're not able, we haven't fully determined this, right? But if we are not able to execute the provision of the services inside of the money we receive, right, at the level that we're expected to deliver, right, then we should have that conversation. But as we said through this before, Mr. Chairman, that conversation, we should have had that conversation prior to someone saying, you know, this is what we're going to do. And given specifically in this case, because this discussion has been going on at least, I want to say, it had to be going on from the first quarter of the year, right, when the new administration came in and they wanted to move the program from planning to the Department of Social Services and Diane Atkins, who retired, I don't even know when she retired, I guess she retired in July, August, right, was already working, and Deputy Commissioner Drummond admitted that they were working with Social Services to move this program, and that stopped, right?
Okay.
So again, the reality from a programmatic perspective, you know, how it is managed, how it's run, the ability to walk into somebody's office and stand on somebody's right. desk and say, you know what, this is an issue that mm-hmm. we need to resolve. In our case, when we were going through the source of income discussion, Norma Drummond, as the largest holder and the chair of their Section 8 committee, right, had a meeting that Elise Marty, Mr. Rogowski, Mr. Burton, myself, and I think Mr. Harkin was there as well. I can't remember for sure. With all the 13 Section 8 agencies, because we were trying to work through some of the problems that the advocates and the opponents had brought up regarding the management of the program. So we were able to do that. So
what I wanted to do was to give each legislator who's present, either whether they're a member of the committee or not, and whether they're by television or not, a chance to either respond to or ask questions of the two advocates who are before us. We're going to do this on a rolling basis. Ms. Marcotte, thank you very much. Mr. Nona, do you have anything you'd like to ask or add?
Yes, I do. Thank you. And I'm sorry I look like the movie Halloween. But anyway, well, first of all, I would say the Section 8 program is an important program because it keeps our residents out of homeless shelters, which would cost the county money. And also, for those that wouldn't be in homeless shelters, keeps them out of substandard housing that may be illegal housing and may be dangerous and maybe a fire trap. So, you know, we can't belittle the importance of this program to county residents who are of limited means in ability to afford expensive apartment in Westchester. Now, during the course of the source of our discussion at the legislation committee on the source of income, the discrimination on the basis of income, we heard a lot of comments about the Section 8 program. We heard a lot of comments about the administration of the program from various constituents, including people from Yonkers. And I think if we're looking at changing the way the program is administered, we need to consider both the needs of the residents and the needs of the landlords as well. Because one of the complaints we had from landlords is the inspections. And I can't remember from whence those complaints came, but maybe they may very well have come from landlords in Yonkers. And I would say it's not simply a case of landlords loving or hating Section 8. There are landlords that accept Section 8, but have problems with the way it's administered. And so if we're looking at a change of administration, we've got to consider both the needs of the residents and the needs of the landlords and what might suffer. Because the landlord's concern is delays in inspection, delays in processing, which could result in loss of rents. And delays could certainly be occasioned by a change in administration. I really don't think there's a risk that this will be RFP to Mumbai. And certainly, I'm willing to consider that if an RFP to a local not-for-profit, maybe they would do a better job than the county. I don't know the answer to that. But it is a serious issue that we really need to make sure we get a good handle on, because the administration of the program affects the residents and the landlords. We want landlords to participate. If the program's not run properly, fewer landlords will participate. If the program's not run properly, residents with Section 8 vouchers will not be able to get their apartments. So these are serious issues. My concern remains the following, articulated at the last meeting. Number one, the contract we have with the state seems to require that the state reimburse our costs. And we need to know why our costs are not getting reimbursed fully and what the reason is for the shortfall.
All of these.
And whether there is in fact a shortfall and whether the state will make up for that shortfall. Part of it could be the reimbursement rate we receive. Are we not obtaining the proper reimbursement rate? And we may not need as many employees as we have in Section 8 to administer the program. Those are all questions that remain unanswered as to how we operate the program. And the answer, if we cannot operate it in a way that we get fully reimbursed by the county, maybe we do need to look at by another organization. But that organization should be a local organization that is close to the program and knows our local needs and should not be RFP, out of state or beyond. So I think we have more homework to do in order to get answers to the questions. Another outstanding item is apparently we failed some sort of standard or test that last year, and we were going to get that report. I don't believe we have it yet.
No.
And I'd like to see that report, right. See why we failed.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Yeah. Ms. Myers.
Thank you very much. Thank you, John. I agree with what you... My biggest concern in all of this is why we believe we're not being reimbursed fully when, at least from what the state has stated so far, we are to be reimbursed for all of the money that is expended. And whether indeed it's that we're doing something wrong here, I mean, I think there's a lot of investigation. Well, I would like to see the county say to the state, you know what, let us keep this going for another year. let's make sure that we're whole. And during this year, we will also see if there might be a more efficient or effective way of handling it through not-for-profits than through the county. But I think this 60 days notice is not going to benefit anyone. And I think the big fear is that, especially because it is optional whether you take Section 8 dwellers or not, you're going to find even more apartment owners, building owners, saying, you know what, yeah, it's a mess in there, no thanks. So I think it would behoove everybody to sort of take a step back. We did approve a resolution last night, basically saying that we should continue this. I think if we put the parameters of sort of like a year and said, give us that time to figure this thing out, I think it would benefit everybody.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. Mr. Rogowski.
Yeah, so I think Legislator Myers is really on to the right track here. First, but let's put everything in context. First, we have a resolution, and the way we discussed it, it seems like we've solved the problem, technically. I mean, what I hear our chairman saying, that our resolution has the force of law, and so, at least in the very, very short run, it seems we've spoken, and nothing's going to change. I mean, that's my takeaway from the resolution we did. But now, moving beyond that, I think the issues are, in fact, as a service, as legislators, we should be asking who can run the program the best. Start from there. Now, if the county can do it the best, we need to maybe continue that. But if, in fact, you know, there's 13 municipalities run their program, the county, there's no exclusivity on this. There's lots of different groups run this program. We never really did bring the Section 8 folks in when we did source of income. Some of us went over there, but I was never satisfied with all the questions we had about Section 8. We never really brought them here to discuss with Section 8 implementers, if you will, what was going on there. So the point is, the questions come up, who really can do it the best way? And I was thinking 6 months, but you have any ideas? The 60 days, I agree with what's been said, this transition's not working. But whether it's 6 months or a year, I think we owe it to the system, whether it's taxpayers, providers, recipients of Section 8, to look at the whole system and try to implement it the best way. Maybe there's hopefully a local NGO that can come in and hire 30 people and run the county program and maybe do it better. But we need time to figure that out. So it seems to me, in the short run, we have our marching orders. We're going to do it. By definition, I mean, there's all this talk, and she, you know, let's say Marcotte, but by definition, under the agreement, all our costs will be covered. I mean, there shouldn't be a debate. Now, one might get into, or you asked the question, the fringe benefits. I mean, what is the, what they say costs, but the contract talks about costs per unit, per month, cover the costs. Does it go to health costs, disability payments, long-term pensions? So, you know, there's a question when the state says they're covering our costs, are they in fact covering our costs, or is there a smudge in the footnote that no pensions or health care, whatever, are not included? So we still need, Mr. Chairman, as you're trying to get the facts, because if all the costs are covered, we're really, now we're back to efficiency. Who can do it better? Who's the most appropriate agency or group to do it? But costs are off the table, and the county executive, as I understand it, started from a cost. We're going to save $500,000. He impressed me. Hey, if we can save $500,000 or $1 million, I have to be, you know, attentive to that. Then we discover apparently that's not true, but we don't know for sure. So I guess right now we've taken sort of a short-term solution, but I like the idea of trying to work through this whole system, 6 months or a year of withdrawing that letter of cancellation, saying for a short period of time we're going to continue it as we look through and decide, no, the county's the best to do it, we're just going to keep doing it, or in fact, someone else can do it better. So, you know, we have those issues to work on, but we also have what's in front of us. We have a letter of cancellation that's in, the clock is running. We have a resolution saying, well, as far as we're concerned, the clock's not running because we're going to keep doing it, so we have to figure out legally what's the impact of that letter of cancellation versus our policy decision to move forward. So there's do we have to send a letter reneging that cancellation, get the county executive to do that? So we have some very specific legal issues, I think, to deal with. And then move on and see, can we buy that 6 months or a year?
Legislator Linda Williams.
Yes. I'm very passionate about this because I have seen people who actually benefit from Section 8 and who will be impacted. And I made a statement last night, and I'm going to repeat, I will never apologize for standing up for those who cannot stand for themselves. Because I think that the disabled are the ones who are going to suffer. Those that the poor and senior citizens, for the most part, are going to fall, as I say, by the wayside. And why I say they fall by the wayside is not what you do sometimes, it's how you do it. Let's assume the county did not want to do this program. I mean, I think it would have been judicious for us to understand that there are impacts on lives, and we need to, if we're not going to do it, give enough time for a smooth transition. To simply say, let's RFP, without knowing how that is going to work, when we have operated the program since 1975. To me, I find that very, very much of a disregard for the persons who are affected. That's how I feel about it. I think that we could do a lot better if we were to, so we probably came out the same place. There are many, many municipalities who run their program. Legislative Marcotte is Eastchester. The Tuckahoe Housing Authority, mm-hmm. They run the Section 8 program, don't they?
Yep.
Right. So there are many, many municipalities who do this. They ought to have been the discussion at the part of the solution. That you can get some experience from talking to people who actually are doing this. And I think that's what's more offensive to me than what you do, is how you do it. Because I think that if you ignore those who are going to be in the detriment because of the decision, and I say ignore because I believe if you are moving quickly and you're not thinking about that, you are ignoring them. That's the way I see that, and I will never take back that statement. I think that we have an opportunity to come back now and perhaps take a look at this and figure out what is the best solution. But it has to be based on not simply looking at $510,000 and saying this is a savings, when $360,000 of it is a non-cash cross charge. And why I say non-cash cross charge? You have an IT department, and that IT department is charging Section 8. Now, who knows if that is a proper charge to Section 8? I'm not sure that is even a proper charge under the guidelines. It's non-cash. The county is not outlaying money for this other than it would have outlaid otherwise, but it's covering part of its fixed cost of an apartment by charging Section 8 and then saying that, oh, I don't want to run the program because I'm charging two-thirds of the cost that we're charging. It's to an internal department. Now, those issues need to be discussed because everyone is running around saying it's costing us $500,000. It's costing us $500,000. And I said last night that even if it was costing us $500,000 out of a $1.8 billion budget, but you've got over 4,000 families who potentially can fall by the wayside by your decision, then I would defer to saving those, because I can tell you one thing, it's going to cost us a whole lot more than $500,000 if this decision isn't made smoothly and people end up being homeless or end up in shelters. Now, the issue about how the Section 8 program works, you need to talk to people who actually are in the program. This inspection process is an inspection that they do in order to get the apartment certified for Section 8, meaning that that's more of a landlord and Section 8 issue than a person who is applying for Section 8 and actually receiving benefits. The person who the caseworker or the person who they deal with, that's the frontline individual that the recipient deals with. They deal with inspection once when they get the apartment inspected. But they deal with the persons who are administering the program on an ongoing basis. So the fact that Yonkers outsource their inspection doesn't mean that you can outsource, doesn't, the logic is not because they're outsourcing inspection, therefore you can outsource the whole administration. It's not, it's two different functions. So I just wanted to get across the point that I've made. I think that it is important that we not lose sight of the fact that there are people involved behind these decisions. It's easy for us to get wrapped up in a number, and that number, you can make it whatever you want. I mean, you give me a pad of paper, I can make whatever deficit you want to make up and kind of justify it, a $500,000 number, and ignore the fact that there are many, many people who are going to be impacted. I had, let me give you an example. I had an 82-year-old person about 2 weeks ago that I've been working with who was on Section 8 and who had been discontinued after having quadruple bypass surgery and coming home to her house and not knowing whether or not she was going to be evicted out of her apartment. There are real people whose lives are impacted by these decisions. And it's easy to sit in these rooms, it's easy to sit in these chambers, it's easy to sit in these offices and say, you know, that's nothing but a number. Let me cross it out and ignore those out there. I'm not saying that anyone is doing that. I'm not saying that to make an accusation. I'm saying that to say that we all must be conscious of the fact that there are lives behind us. Perhaps think, step back a little when we're making these decisions. Thank you.
Any comment, Mr. Chairman? May I make a comment?
Yes. I'm trying to work my way around the room. And Mr.
Are we finished?
Had the memory lapse, which he has now corrected, he'd like to ask a question. Then we'll get to you, Mr. Markoff.
One question I forgot to ask for our two guests. Because I think at least Dennis commented, you know, maybe someone could do a better job than the county. I mean, we don't know for sure, but would you be supportive or would it be okay with you if, in fact, the county took the position that we're going to take 6 months and a year or a year and review this with the idea of possibly putting it out to, no, I mean, again, what our roles are going to say, possibly going to the state with the idea that an outside group might do as good or better job? I mean, does it have to be done by the county or are you
open to the idea? No. I don't think it has to be done by the county. I mean, I think we're concerned about the residents. Okay, mm-hmm. I think everybody, all the advocates, concerned about the advocates. We're not really concerned about, you know, Section 8 workers' jobs. I mean, we're concerned about it on some level, but we're concerned about the administration program.
So,
and if it was done in a proper way,
it was timely, transition time.
Yeah, sure, we'd have no objection to that. We're concerned about services to the people. Okay. Just a quick follow-up to what Legislator Williams said. People should understand, like, you know, sitting in these rooms, I mean, a Section 8 voucher is like the Holy Grail. People die for these things. People would do anything for these things. This is the only thing that gets people through this housing crisis. People would do anything for these things. People have to, I think around this table should understand how valuable these things are and to the degree that people hold the value of them. It's really, really for people in this in the housing business, they know this is what you want. People wait years for these things.
Mm-hmm. And the worst thing is to see someone have a voucher and then have it expire and not be able to use it. It's horrible, yeah. No, I echo everything Dennis said. I think that our main concern is the welfare of the people that we serve, the residents. And I think it's a true measure of our civilization, our health as a region, is how we treat the most vulnerable among us. And I think, of course, we have to look at bottom line, and that is very important, and we need to be fiscally responsible. But we also have to make sure that we remember who the people are, the real people that we are trying to serve. And we would have no objection to finding a way to run the program more efficiently, but I think we all agree that we need time to look at it and see how we can improve on the system. It's in our interest to make sure that the system is administered as efficiently as possible.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Marcotte.
I just wanted to reiterate the fact, because I think I'm not, it's a blatant attempt to mislead, but I find some of your comments are misleading because, again, these vouchers are not going to dry up and disappear.
May I ask that we direct our questions at the...
It was actually
trying to bring things out from
done.
Our speakers. We took that one down pretty well last night. Linda, if I may close this particular discussion and move on with some more speakers, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. Dennis, Andre, thank you very much. Our next two speakers, which is to say the end of the first row here, and then we go back to the second row. Mel, you're on.
This is an 09. Do we have a plan agreement?
Don't know. How long is it? 1 year. For 1 year? Okay. Well, no, no, we have the TAP grant? Barbara, do you ever see it?
That's the only thing.
Okay, that's all we got. Okay, for the record, please, if you could state your name and your affiliation. Guys, what?
No, but I wanted to.
Kenzie Alfer, Senior Vice President of West TAP.
Okay, guys, can we have a single conversation, please? I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And I'll also share another hat, because one comment I'm going to make is from another hat. I chair the Affordable Housing Board of the town of Yorktown. And I'll start with that.
Well, let's get Mel in here first, though. You've got to say your name.
Good afternoon. I'm Mel Tansman. I'm the executive director of Westchester Disabled on the Move, independent living center based in Yonkers.
Good. All right. Let's begin.
Okay. First, a comment from my Yorktown hat. Yorktown operates its own Section 8 program, and the town board over the years has been concerned about, is it covering all of its administrative costs or not? Of course, not wanting the burden to be on the local taxpayers for it. But one of the great, and they've managed to see that the program is managed so it does, by the way, and the employees of the program are in the, you know, state retirement system and everything, there are many similarities. But of course, that's a very tiny program. But one of the reasons why the town has opted to continue operating the program is because there's a public hearing held every year on the administrative plan, and input is given by both the residents of the town and the elected officials as to what the preferences and priorities are for the selection of the applicants. So there was a time when they wanted to give priority to families, there was a time when they wanted to give priority to seniors. So by having the local control of the program, they were able to do that, because there was debate, maybe we should just give our program over to the county and let it be absorbed, and they realized they were going to give up that input. So I don't know if the same thing applies to the county program, but if it does, I'd urge you to think about that carefully. Because if you farm it out and the state selects somebody, is the Board of Legislators and is the our Westchester residents going to be able to have input into policies and procedures? Switching to my West Ab hat, I came to West Ab in 1987. There was a serious crisis of homelessness that was growing in the county of Westchester, and many homeless were being housed outside of Westchester County. The Department of Social Services were paying for homeless to be housed in hotels in Dutchess County and even in New York City. And one of the things that happened with the Section 8 program is a decision was made at that time to give priority to homeless families for Section 8 vouchers. Once again, because there was local control of the program, these decisions could be made. And that was one of the many things that helped enable homeless families to be able to afford apartments in Westchester County instead of being housed in a shelter or a hotel or being shipped to a hotel in another community. West Ham provides housing for low-income families, both families coming out of some of the homeless shelters, and we operate housing for the homeless, and low-income working families. And just from a landlord point of view, as well as a service provider for the tenants, I just want to echo everything that was said about the importance of the Section 8 program, both to landlords and to the people that are served by the Section 8 program. It is vital to allowing many low-income working families to afford housing in the Westchester market, and these are the same households that are providing vital services in the community as well. So I just think any decision about it has to be very carefully thought out as to potential impacts. Thanks.
Thank you. Will?
Sure. I represent people with disabilities. I don't know if you have all seen today's Journal News. I know that Barbara has a copy of my Community Views piece, which directly addresses this, and I guess some of the things I'll say today really reflects what I said in that editorial. One, I concur with my colleagues who spoke earlier that the issue isn't so much at this moment whether Westchester County should continue taking on the administration of this. The issue is what impact will the precipitous dropping of the administration, less than two months, have on recipients. I do take issue with legislator over here. I think it will have a huge impact. I think that It's really unrealistic to expect that starting January 1, even the most sophisticated not-for-profit will be able to take 4,400 vouchers and continue to pay landlords and continue to get people recertified. It's just not realistic. And I think it will ultimately cost the county money. How? Housing courts, the costs in housing courts, the number of cases, the number of evictions, because people, landlords are not going to just say, well, you know, it's going to, 2-3 months, they'll get their act together and the new administration of these for these vouchers will get us our payments. They're not going away. People are going to get eviction papers. Legal services will be flooded with cases that they won't be able to handle. The Department of Social Services, when people fall behind in their rent and they get an eviction notice, the Department of Social Service in many cases has to pay for that back rent. For my population, and I got to tell you that if people with disabilities, with significant disabilities, become homeless, they don't end up in homeless shelters. They end up in nursing homes. And once you're in a nursing home, it is, and I got to tell you, because I work on this all the time, it is damn hard to get a person out. And remember that it costs like $8,000 to $9,000 a month to keep people in a nursing home. And the county pays some of those costs. Okay? So the issue and the long-term issue, which I don't think should be on the table right now, of whether the county is the best entity to administer this program, I think we should study. Myself and a lot of other advocates feel that unfortunately the county doesn't do the best job, especially for the most vulnerable folks like people with disabilities. One thing that was said earlier that I also need to educate you folks about is that, in fact, for people with disabilities, one of the responsibilities of the Section 8 administrator agency is to assist them in finding housing. They don't do it. We know they don't do it. It is extremely hard to do it. They don't have the capacity to do it, but they don't. Their answer is, if a person comes to them and says, well, you know, I'm in a wheelchair and I need an accessible apartment, what do you think they do? They give them Westchester Disabled on the Moves or WRO's phone number. We have a staff of 10, and only one of them handles, housing issues. And we don't have the capacity either to identify the accessible units out there. But there is a responsibility that the county is not fulfilling under the law to provide reasonable accommodations to people with disabilities who are Section 8, either applicants or recipients. So those are some of the issues. And I do think that further study as to whether a grassroots community-based organization may be more appropriate for administering this program, maybe a little less bureaucratic, maybe a little more in touch with the people in the community, That remains to be seen. I'm not arguing one way or the other now, because I don't think I know all the data or information yet. Remember, and I do appreciate what the legislator who left this had to say, is that there are people behind this. A person on disability, on SSI, let's say, don't forget they get under $800 a month. In my op-ed piece, I mentioned that there's a nationwide study that's done, I forget the actual name of it, but basically costed out of housing, that they basically say that in Westchester County, which is the fourth most expensive county in the United States in terms of finding apartments, that a person on SSI would have to pay 191% of their monthly income to be able to afford a very modest apartment. That's why Section 8 is so important to my constituency. So my message today is I applaud you for your memorandum, and I hope, your resolution. And I do hope that the administration respects it with the force of law that he says that you say it holds, and give it some time. You know, let us look at it. Why don't you have people like myself, like Ken, like the other folks who are here today, talk about who would be most appropriate. Let's wait till next year. I don't think the costs to the county are that outrageous that we can't do it in a planful and mindful way. That's my comments.
Thank you. Legislators, Mr. Nona, do you have anything you'd like to ask?
Very much. I think the point's been made that it may be very ambitious to think that a transition could be made so quickly. I think it could really result in disruptions of the program, serious disruptions of the program. And we need more answers to the questions that we've raised as to why, you know, what is this, as Legislator Rogowski raised, you know, is this loss a real loss or is it a paper loss? I have nothing further to add other than that.
Okay. Ms. Marsh.
No, I think everything that has been said is right on. And I think what we need to do is to push to give ourselves more time, do this in a very thoughtful, analytical method, and make sure that we are kept whole, that we're not losing money, as at the same time that we look to see if we are the right home for the Section 8 administration. The other thing that I had felt all along, looking especially at, you know, sort of this crazy quilt of who administers what with Section 8, it seems to me that the efficiencies, if anything, might be gained, although you said that Yorktown didn't want to, and I suppose this is the same for many municipalities who handle it themselves, they don't want to lose the local control. But it does seem like that's also something that could be investigated. Would it be more efficient to have all of Section 8 throughout the county running through the county, as opposed to having just some of it in the county and some of it in different municipalities? I mean, I think this would be, that to me is the better way of looking at consolidation. And we've looked at a lot of different areas of the county in that way. I would like to look at this in that way as well. But at the very least, give us at least 6 months to a year and keep everything as is and tell the state, you know what, we'll get back to you next year. We'll let you know.
Mr. Rogowski.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I guess, you know, it boils down to my village of Portchester gave back the program to the county. The mayor came to me. It was his understanding that he could save money, give up an employee, ship it over to the county, and that's what we did. But, you know, what I'm learning now, frankly, what I'm understanding is, you know, either Portchester wasn't doing it, they shouldn't have been losing money. I mean, if the contract, I mean, you know, they should have had to have done that if things were going, and so it comes back again to,
yeah,
you know, that whole issue, the dollars and who's losing money and not losing money, if you're getting fully funded, efficiencies, I agree, but maybe even if municipalities are getting paid for it and they want to keep that local control, it's like, what's the big deal?
Right.
However, but I think we've got a lot of good input. What I'm hearing is that there is no necessarily holy grail with the county doing. We want it, everyone's thinking, what's the best for the recipients and for the system? And if someone else, as you say, is closer, grassroots organization. I know some organizations that probably do a very good job. So I think, Mr. Chairman, falls to the committee, falls to you. The next step, again, if the clock is running, there's a letter out there, a cancellation letter. And I think with all this good input, we need to focus on an action plan, and whether it's bringing the county attorney in and say, what do we do if there's a committee, as a board, we decide we want the 6 months of the year, we want to try to see, you know, should the county hold on to it, or is there a transition to someone else that could do it more, forget the money, but just efficiently and for the betterment. I have problems, going back to previous debates we've had the past year, of the inspections. I mean, consolidating the administration is one thing, but it's a federal program. One of my concerns on a whole source of income is we didn't have control over the inspections. You know, if all the inspections were done the same way, that would be helpful. But not to get it, the action plan right now is what do we do in the next 50 days to get where I think we want to get from a policy point of view is hold on to it temporarily, if not permanently, until we come up with a transition. And that's the burden that falls on us and on you.
Ms. Williams, A.
I agree wholeheartedly with my colleagues, especially Legislator Myers and Legislator Rogowski. I think we need to find out how we can make sure that we delve into this a little more, get the answers that we need to obtain, and give it some more time in order to get these answers and figure out what is the best thing. No one's saying that the county is the only person that can administer this program, but we need to know, first of all, these paper expenses that were given to us last week, we need to investigate them and find out if they are truly legitimate expenses or are they just paper expenses. We need more time so that the people who possess the Section 8 vouchers, they need to make an adjustment or they need to understand what's going to happen next. I've gotten any number of calls from constituents worried and concerned about, you know, and relatives of constituents. What's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to my Section 8? And how am I going to proceed from here? Who do I call? What happens to them? So we need to give people a chance to make the adjustment if in truth we are going to farm this out. And but we need to know, first of all, whether or not we need to do this.
Thank you. Ms. Marcotte?
No.
Okay. Ken, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about the experience that you have in Yorktown. Like Yorktown, Austin has a Section 8 office which it carries in its municipal building. And am I correct in believing, we were told by Deputy Commissioner Drummond that there is a per voucher per month, per active voucher per month reimbursement. Is that the way you're funded? Are you aware of
how it works? Honestly, I'm not familiar with the way the Yorktown program is funded, so okay. I can't comment on it.
Do you know if you have any opportunity to outsource the inspections, as apparently Yonkers has done?
Yeah, I think that's always possible.
Okay. It occurs to me that when we talk about the Yonkers experience, the Yonkers experience consists of MHS, a division of the City of Yonkers, a government agency, which has chosen to contract out its inspections. It is not a completely contracted out relationship. If that's the case, it is not unreasonable to envision Westchester County doing the same thing. It is not inherent that it is a unified operation. It is not inherent that it's not. It's just we have been working on the assumption that Westchester County, which currently operates everything for its 4,400 vouchers, is the only way to do it. That appears not to be true. We have been saying, and I think misleadingly so, that if this contract, which is going to go away at the end of December unless something is done, means that the county will no longer be in the position of running the program as though that were the only way to do it. And not only Mr. Rogowski's, but others, I'm going to prepare a memorandum of action that I want to undertake, and one of which is to see it drill down quite directly into this question of the 4,400 vouchers. We know, for example, that a number of these vouchers are in fact vouchers given up by Port Chester and by Mount Vernon. But they are apparently all over the county. They can go anywhere. Why Westchester County administers some vouchers and Austining administers some vouchers and Yorktown administers some vouchers is not at all clear to me, and whether they move back and forth. But it is my understanding that if you get a voucher in Yorktown, you can take it to Cincinnati, mm-hmm. in which case then how is all of that dealt with? So, and how in the world do you possibly inspect said voucher if it's in Cincinnati?
Right. If you relocate to Cincinnati, you have to actually transfer the voucher to Cincinnati,
the
so
voucher,
it's done there.
Okay. So Yorktown loses that voucher.
Yes. Correct.
It goes to Cincinnati, and that's the end of it. And then because of the reimbursement process, which is based on an active voucher, Cincinnati now picks up one, and Yorktown loses one. Mm-hmm. Right. I want to confirm that that's the way, because
horse trading that goes on between Section 8 programs in that porting of vouchers, because my understanding is the Yorktown program has done that, where somebody through the Yorktown program winds up finding housing in Peekskill, that rather than ongoing just administering that, mm-hmm. that voucher gets ported to the City of Peekskill, and Yorktown gets another voucher to
gets a replacement voucher?
Yes. I'm not sure the mechanics of how that works.
It's on a peg somewhere? They grab and say, okay, you just lost one.
Well, maybe, let's say the person goes to Detroit, Michigan, and maybe they have an unused voucher, and it may be an exchange. Okay, you're getting one of our people because they're moving to Detroit, so we get one of your available vouchers.
Well, I would like to find out the answer to that question because I don't believe it. I don't believe that there is an unlimited pot of Section 8 vouchers that are free cash floating around, because a voucher conducted in Detroit is a very different financial proposition than a voucher conducted in Westchester County. So there's got to be a limit here somewhere, and we don't know. I don't know. I don't think any of the rest of us apparently know. So I want to have the Section 8 Administrative Office in Westchester County come in here and talk to us about this. Norma Drummond said to us that the voucher reimbursement of $73.29, I think it was, comes to us on the basis of an active voucher, that a voucher that has not been assigned is not reimbursed. Well, that suggests that every voucher, the only way to get maximum reimbursement is to have every voucher active. There's probably going to be a vacancy rate of 5% somewhere in there, and maybe that's why we're not making money. I don't know. But I want to find this out, too. And this goes to the concept of efficiency. It has been suggested that we have a caseload of 100 vouchers per caseworker, that the standard from HUD is 150, and that Yonkers operates on 300 vouchers per employee. I don't know whether that's true. Do you happen to know what your ratios are?
Yorktown program is in the ballpark of 150 or 160, and there was the person who ran the program, the program director, and one, I think, part-time employee.
So it's one and a half employees and...
And I think they may have used a contract employee for the inspections.
Okay, Ms. Dodds came up with a chart which she was kind enough to put together for us, and at least as of the date of 11/5, it says 152 vouchers in Yorktown and 152 of them all in use. Congratulations. That's filling it up.
You know, I don't think there's any question that there aren't economies of scale, in consolidating programs, and that's certainly something to be looked at throughout government. Mm-hmm. That it is more costly to operate a very small Section 8 program than to operate a program.
Well, 152 and 1.5 employees is 100 per employee. Maybe that's a low standard. Maybe it should be 150, in which case the half-timer would all things be equal go. But I'm not sure. And there are far more questions here than there are answers. But having your availability, frankly, and I would find very helpful.
The other thing, I just wanted to respond to the question you raised about the farming out of the inspections. From my personal experience at Westhab in the late 80s, early 1990s, when the county got the cooperation of many of the municipalities' Section 8 programs to devote certain numbers of vouchers to provide housing for the homeless, to get out of the homeless system and into permanent apartments, county contracted with Westhab at that time, and we did the inspections for the different municipalities for those homeless vouchers. I think the theory behind it then was that if we were asking Eastchester to house a family in Mount Vernon, that their inspectors normally were doing the inspections in their municipality, and it would be a hardship or an extra cost to them to have to travel a lot further. So, but the main point is really it is possible to contract out if you have somebody who can competently and in a timely manner, which is critical in the Section 8 program, it has to be timely, but do the inspections. That's not as much of an issue as where the people are that are meeting with the prospective voucher holders and resolving their problems.
Mr. Nunzio.
Mr. Chairman.
Sorry, Al Nunzio.
Albert.
Nunzio,
I never go by Al. I go by Albert. That's
Albert.
Fine. But Mr. Chairman, do we know the ratio of vouchers to employees?
Caseworker voucher was supposedly 1 to 100. One caseworker for 100 vouchers.
Because using the numbers that Norma gave me, I unfortunately could not make the meeting yesterday, so I don't know if I missed anything. But if there was 20 staff assistants processing applications out of 40 employees, minus some inspectors and I guess some...
Five inspectors.
So 20 into the 4,681 vouchers, that's over 200.
It's 220 a case. So that's why I think that's a bad number. But there are too many bad numbers floating around here. I think that's one of our research problems. I wish I had legislators known as Paul with Pace Law School, because I'd ask him to get me two really intensive researchers to do this.
Those are numbers that she gave.
Right. Yeah.
But what
is there any possibility, John, that there's anybody who's free who might want to do a one-week research project?
Let's check. I think we have a new possible new volunteer for intern. Betsy Gastoy can confirm that.
Great.
So we may have some.
No. Okay, well, we'll try that, and I appreciate that. Thank you. Walker.
Two quick comments. It would be interesting to see, though, because you need to review those applications to see who is eligible for a Section 8 voucher. So for how many applications come in, you got to see who's eligible. In addition to the people, the households that have Section 8 vouchers, and they need to be recertified.
So the ratio is even larger.
Exactly.
Right.
But I think it depends on the HUD definition. What do they consider a case? And that needs to be addressed. Second of all, let's not forget that the Section 8 program is the only instrument right now available, at least to my knowledge, that fosters mixed income communities. And given that this county is under a dark cloud of fair and affordable housing, and it's imperative that the county breathes carefully when it comes to how they're going to assess this program. So it's irresponsible for the administration to want to do away with this in less than 60 days, because it's not putting just the current stakeholders, but the future of this program in this county at risk.
Mr. Anderson, do you have anything you'd like to add? We've got, I think, another couple of speakers.
No, I echo Blanca's comments, actually. So.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Next. Let's see. We're in the third row here. Anyone else who wants to speak, testify, please come up. I think we can, if we've got three people, we can just do it all at once. If we got more than three, we'll have to do it in two shifts. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, for the record, please, your name and your affiliation.
Lisa Buck, I'm the director of the Bridge Fund of Westchester.
Debbie Perkins with Director of Hudson Valley Programs at Community Housing Innovations.
Thank you. All right, Lisa, do you want to kick it off?
I will kick it off, and I won't be long, because I agree with everybody that has gotten up and spoken in support of Section 8. I do want to say, and again, this is a little repetitive, that we deal with a lot of Section 8 recipients at the Bridge Fund. We assist them. And I do see problems with how the program is run. And I do see problems with miscommunication or not good communication between Section 8 and Department of Social Services. We're also working with Department of Social Services now, where the whole entire housing upper echelon is gone. And it's creating problems in terms of service delivery from the point of view of DSS. And that's making their work with Section 8 more complicated. It's giving us way more Section 8 recipients to work with than we typically do. So I just want to say systemically, I think this is a truly healthy exploration and exercise to move through, but I do think if all the stakeholders need to be at the table. I would love to be at the table when this is reassessed and looked at. And I do think the timing of 60 days is a real issue and a very, very dangerous proposition without any plan, without any due process. I think it's very dangerous, and that's all I have to say.
Yes, I will piggyback on that with the state putting an RFP. You're not going to see an RFP out till January. There's no way a decision can be made before March. I just don't see that happening. So I have a decision in January and March if we go through with that. There is going to be a black hole. I'm aware several hats for my agency. I really wasn't prepared for this, but I oversee our homeless programs at CHI, and without Section 8, a lot would be staying where they are. With a single dad with one or two kids booking a Target at $9 an hour, they are no different than you or I, absolutely no different, other than they make a lot less money. They couldn't live here. They could not work at Target. They could not participate in this community. You could not have a Target here if you do not have those citizens living in this community. And they can't do it without Section 8. Number two, as a landlord, CHI owns 250 units in Westchester. We are a $19 million company across six counties. As a landlord, even though we seem big, we are a nonprofit. If we don't get paid in full, we cannot operate affordable housing. We cannot be a Section 8 friendly landlord. We cannot provide lower rents than Section 8 allows to other people who don't receive Section 8 to provide affordable housing in this community if we don't get our rents paid. We have some taxes, we have energy, we have gas, we have electric, we have oil. A lot of the smaller landlords cannot absorb these costs. They're on a month-to-month budget like everybody else, so a building owner with 5 units in a building, if they don't get their rents paid on a timely basis by Section 8 or any other tenant, they're not paying their taxes. They're getting foreclosed upon. They lose their housing, those tenants now don't have a place to live. So it's a huge, it's bigger than this one person or this one city county employee. It really is a very global effect, especially in Lower Westchester. That's all.
Thank you. Ms. Barkhart. Okay, Ms. Myers. Ms. Williams.
No.
I think we've lacked a voice of the landlord here at this meeting. It was not by design, but it's it has happened that way. So I'm very grateful for your coming, Debbie, to bring this perspective to us. If it's true that we're going to see a black hole come January 1st, and that it probably won't get picked up until March 1st, when the RFP will be out and cleared and all the rest of it, I don't know how we're going to meet those needs. I really don't. It's my understanding that the vouchers are paid out of the county treasury. The money comes in and then the checks go out. If the county is going to give up the check writing, is the state going to do it? That strikes me as one of the world's worst ideas. We've got to find out. This is another one of these tasks that I'm going to be assigning to research. And without this kind of information, we might as well be prepared. If it's going to be a disaster, it's going to be a disaster, but at least we can be prepared to figure out how the triage is going to work. And the landlords have to be protected in this because, as you say, 2 months of not getting their check, even if it's going to come in April, does nobody any good if you have to pay your taxes and your utilities. Not to mention anything else, your mortgage, for example. Yes.
Especially in the winter with fuel.
Especially in the winter with the fuel. So we are in. It's never a crisis unless the gun's really pointed at your head. But we are in a fairly serious semi-crisis mode on this matter, at least as far as information is concerned. I don't know whether, in fact, a lot of this may turn out to be a tempest in a teapot. I don't think so, but I don't know. And so I'm actually, if you wouldn't mind being available to be called by whoever I'm going to be able to get to do some of this research. If I do it myself, I probably will, but it'll be less efficient. To see if we can drill down to this, and then we'll just go from there. Mr. Nunn, I forgot to ask you if you want to say anything. Do you have anything you want to bring up?
No, I appreciate the view on the landlord side. I think there are two sets of stakeholders here besides us, the county. There's the landlords and there's Section 8 voucher holders. And, you know, we need to consider how this precipitous change will affect both of them, because we want the voucher holders to be able to get apartments and stay in apartments, and we want to encourage landlords to participate. They're not going to participate if the program isn't run efficiently.
Yep.
That was the main complaint we heard from landlords who participated in the program. They want to participate, but they're concerned about how the program is run.
Okay. Yep.
All right. Thank you very much, both of you. Is there anyone who wants to make a wrap-up statement, or is there anyone who hasn't spoken who'd like to speak?
I just have one quick comment. I just think that I know we're meeting, I know we're having this conversation, but in the meantime, I'm hoping someone has reached out to the state to say, can we put the request to discontinue this program on hold? Because pretty soon, December 31st...
The chairman has had discussions.
Yeah,
okay, good.
And we've sent them our resolution.
I'm not sure where that is beyond it's been reached out. in that direction, anyway. We've also, I think, spoken with the administration, and I'm not aware of the status of any of those discussions, one way or the other. So I wouldn't cast aspersions on the administration.
Okay.
But yes, absolutely. If there's some way to even extend this for 90 days, right, that would be terrific. Okay. Anyone else? All right. Thank you again very much. Ms. Dodds. Ms. Dodds is desperate to get her minutes.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion for the approval of the minutes of October 26th.
All in favor say aye. Okay, may I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Meyer, second by Ms. Williams. All in favor say aye. We are adjourned. Again, thank every one of you so very much.
Likewise. I have a question off the record.
Off the record.
Wait,
we've heard off the